And good morning. There we go. I got the volume control adjusted where I can hear myself now. Okay, I think I got a good program for you this morning. One of the fun things about doing this is I just uncover so much information that I just didn't know the answer to. I think it's really good that you have a lifelong desire to be curious. That is really where you want to be. A buddy of mine was telling me you can sure run out of money, but you can't run out of learning. He's right. There is a very finite amount of resources that you can accumulate in your lifetime or get your hands on. But there is an infinite supply of knowledge if you're willing to learn. So maybe that's what we need to be today. We need to be the type of people that continually develop and we grow. Learn, mature, learning how to take better care of ourselves. And of course, from my perspective, it seems to be pretty obvious. If you take good care of yourself, that's your ticket to doing all the things that God created you to do. You know, your purpose in life. I came across this article right here. It wasn't even what I was looking for. I was trying to uncover a different answer to a different question I had, but I came across this. And at first, I got to admit, I just blew it off. I said, I don't want to know that stuff. Boy, was I wrong. I think it's good to sometimes you get a shot out of left field and you don't even know, okay, where'd that come from? But, you know, this is really good right here. And maybe some of what I'm talking about this morning, it has to do with one of the callers that called the program last week. And so what I want you to do is I want to set the tone here and ask you a question. Do you want to have arteries and blood vessels that are in good working order for the rest of your life? Well, that's a rhetorical question. Of course. You're only going to live as long as you have arteries that are spry and supple and flexible and healthy. You're not going to live a long time. If the linings of your arteries are just swimming in an ocean of high blood pressure and insulin and sticky, gooey blood sugar and one round of inflammation after another, you're not going to make it. We got to fight against that. So this article right here, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, but it's so interesting. I hope that you can hear and receive what I'm going to tell you, because there's several different angles on this, but all of them seem to be so simple and so straightforward. And so when I started the other day, I was trying to look up articles, and there was a bunch of them I just had to quickly discard because almost all of them would eventually lead to, you take this pharmaceutical, you take that pharmaceutical. And I'm not here this morning to talk about pharmaceuticals. I mean, if you want to listen to that program, I'm sure there's plenty of videos on YouTube that talk about the amazing wonders of taking high-dose cholesterol medication, how it's better than sliced bread and butter. I would question if it's actually better than butter. Man, I wonder if eating butter all day long is better than taking a statin. Anyway, I'm just joking. Let's get on to the program. Okay, I came across this article. And I think we can extrapolate and just draw out of it some good information that just about anybody could use. Okay, here's the article. I'm not going to read the title to you, but here's in the abstract. Supplementation with 1,200 milligrams of lecithin a day makes the blood vessels about 10 years younger. When I read that, I thought, okay, you've got my attention. It also makes you feel stronger and more vital. I thought, wow, I like those words, stronger and vital. Japanese researchers affiliated with Tokyo Medical and Dental University come to this conclusion in a study in which 89 healthy women aged 40 to 60, they were the ones that participated. So let me give you some of the details. The lecithin that the Japanese used in this study consisted of 24% phosphatidylcholine, 20% phosphatidylethylolamine, and 12% phosphatidylinositol. You know, the other day I gave a talk at Breaking Bread, and those two first two compounds, that's what brain cells are made of. It's almost as if when you take lecithin, you're giving your body a substance that it can use to build new cell membranes of your brain cells. Anyway, I'm skipping that next paragraph. There is an American molecular scientist by the name of Dr. Gary Nicholson. And what he thinks is that if you administer this type of a substance, you know, it's called lecithin, that can be very, very useful in what he's kind of labeled a term, lipid replacement therapy. Well, now, what I would say is an oil change. And so, think about this. Does your car ever need an oil change? Well, yeah. You're going to have just the normal byproducts of wear and tear on the engine. And it may be there's a small piece of metal, maybe there's some carbon, maybe there's some debris that's just a byproduct of burning, 90% gasoline and 10% ethanol? Yeah. There's bad things that happen to metal parts when you add water to them. That's what ethanol does. So you would not, haven't you ever looked at those YouTube videos where you see a shop say, this is why you want to change the oil? It looks like black tar, this thick tarry gunk. That's what happens if you don't change the oil. Eventually, the oil, it doesn't look like oil anymore. It looks like tar. Who out there would buy a brand new car or buy a used car and not make an effort to maintain it by removing the dirty oil after 3,000 miles? Now, I know we're not here to get sidetracked, but I don't believe in this whole business of waiting 10,000 miles to change the oil. Yeah, I know. I know the manufacturers recommend that. But when you start watching videos on YouTube or reading articles about what oil engineers or oil scientists actually demonstrate, man, they can show you real quick oil is not going to make it to 10,000 miles. It is going to break down. It's going to lose its ability to work properly. You know how expensive an engine is? I don't want to buy one. Anyway, change your oil way, way, way before 10,000 miles. You do what you want to do. I'm not letting mine go past 3. Anyway, that's just my opinion. Okay, so Gary Nicholson, he calls it lipid replacement therapy. And I'm thinking, I like that term. You mean there is a way that we could remove the old damaged oils from the body and replace them with new, healthy, vital? And you know what? Your cells aren't engines. No, they're living structures. Every cell in your body is alive. Don't you think that kind of raises the stakes just a little bit? Okay, so Nicholson suspects that lipid replacement therapy is an anti-aging strategy. Okay? But perhaps may also be effective against what's called chronic fatigue problems. If you want to call it chronic fatigue syndrome, or people that have chronic fatigue. Okay, so in this study, they did blood values on these women. Okay, no men were in the study, just women. And according to the blood work, according to them, it looked good. But there's only one problem. All these women had fatigue. Every single one of them complained that they were tired. So that would be like asking, please tell me, day in, day out, what are your energy levels? If the number 10 represents amazing, wonderful energy, this is the way that you want to feel all the time. It's almost euphoric. You just feel that good. And when you feel good, you want to get up and do stuff, right? And when you don't feel good, what do you want to do? You want to sit on the couch all day long and watch one movie after the other, or swipe Instagram on your phone. So I hear this all the time. Oh, Dr. Morgan, I'm totally exhausted. I can't do anything. But my blood work looks great. I must be in amazing health. Well, that would be a wrong interpretation. And now, whose job is this? It's the job of your physician or your nurse practitioner or the physician's assistant. They're supposed to dig deeper if you're exhausted. That is not a good place to be in. So in this particular study, 89 very healthy women aged 40 to 60, that was the age range, all of them were exhausted and fatigued. So the researchers divided the women into three groups. For 8 weeks, these groups took a placebo. Well, that means there's nothing of nutritional quality in it, or there's nothing in the placebo that they would surmise or expect to greatly benefit the human organism. Then group 2 and 3, they either gave them 600 milligrams of lecithin, that came from soy. So if it says on the label soybean lecithin, that's what I'm referring to. Now the 600 milligrams, that would be what they call low-dose lecithin. Now, what they called high-dose was when it was 1,200 milligrams of lecithin. To me, that's super easy. They took it every day for 8 weeks. And it says here, this is their... They give full disclosure and tell you what the source is. They say there's a company called Kikkoman. I think they're pretty famous for making soy sauce. They said they financed one of the researchers on this deal. So at least that's full disclosure. So here it is right here. When they used the low-dose lecithin, and they compared that against the placebo. Remember, the low-dose lecithin was 600 milligrams. There really was not that much of a difference when it comes to resolving fatigue. But lo and behold, guess what happened when they went to higher dose lecithin? They have what's called the Chalder, that's spelled C-H-A-L-D-E-R. It's a fatigue scale. So there's a questionnaire that, depending on how you answer the questions, it's going to kind of cut to the heart of the matter and tell you how fatigued or exhausted a person is. But when they gave the higher dose lecithin, oh, all of a sudden now, there's quite the significant increase in these women experiencing what's called vigor. You ever heard of the term vigor? It means physical strength and good health. That's what that means. So if somebody says, I have vim and vigor, that means I've got physical strength, I possess that, and I also have the feeling of possessing good health. I think I like that. They actually have a questionnaire called the Palms Vigor Index. You think I'm making this up? I'm not. But they look at the placebo, and then they look at the low-dose lecithin, and then they put it on a scale and find out how much vigor or vitality do these people have. Well, there, to me, I don't see any difference between the low-dose lecithin and the placebo on improving energy or vigor. But lo and behold, when it comes to the high dose lecithin, and that's exactly 1,200 milligrams of lecithin. It says here, the women that took 1,200 milligrams of lecithin, they report a significant increase in their experience of vigor. That's physical strength and good health. This means they felt more resilient. If the women in the 1,200 milligram group were to give their feeling of strength a score from 0 to 10, you know, 0 would be total depletion of all strength, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel. And what would 10 be? That would be the expression of great strength, perfection. So what they went was, they went from a 6 to an 8. I don't know about you, but if I had my choice, if I could choose to be an 8 on that strength or that vitality scale versus a 6, I'm choosing the 8. So do you get where I'm coming from on this? I mean, you know, don't you, when you feel really, really good. So if they do a blood test and your blood markers come back perfect, you know, according to them, whatever that means, I'm really open-minded on that topic. I think I would rather look at the blood test myself and really determine if that's what it means, or did they sort of overlook something. Or what I think is common is that there's just a lot of people, they don't even know how to read a blood test. They haven't got a clue. Do you know how I know that? How'd I come to that conclusion? Because I look at blood tests all day long and I'll see the doctor's handwritten notes. Everything looks great. And I'm going, well, if it looks great, why do you have 5 markers that are high and 2 that are low? You know, you're in the red line on your mean corpuscular volume. Why is that? I have no idea why people say the things that they say. But you have a moral responsibility to tell people the truth, even if they don't want to hear it. I mean, sometimes you have to. Do you think that every single day that I wake up and go to work that everybody agrees 100% with everything that I tell them about their... No, they don't. Some people are downright delusional. They could be near death, and you could explain to them, this is really, really not great. You're in kidney failure. And it just goes in one ear and out the other. But that's their choice. They have to make a decision on how they're going to take care of themselves. I think God has been very generous to us. He gives us one opportunity, one chance after the other to take good care of ourselves. So the women, they noted that all of a sudden, even though they were fatigued, all their energy levels improved just with soybean lecithin. Maybe you should make a note of that. Okay, here's another part of it right here. Here's a different angle. When they supplemented with 1,200 milligrams of lecithin, not the 600, that was called the low dose, but the 1,200, that's a higher dose. Or the way that I would say it is, maybe 1,200 milligrams is really more of an optimal dose. It's the Goldilocks just right to get the job done. You can say this any way you want, but all of a sudden everything starts working perfectly at 1,200 milligrams, whereas at 600 it just wasn't quite enough to get the engine to operate efficiently on all 8 cylinders. So the supplementation with 1,200 milligrams of lecithin per day, it also improved the women's cardiovascular health. It reduced their diastolic blood pressure. So that's your resting blood pressure, or the blood pressure between the two heartbeats, or the muscular contraction of the heart. You can't see the chart I'm looking at, but man, it looks really impressive. So when they measure millimeters of mercury of diastolic blood pressure, it significantly lowers when women took the lecithin. Now here's one more category. I like this one a lot also. It's called CAVI. That stands for the Cardio Ankle Vascular Index. And what that is, I think they do that with an ultrasound. I may be wrong. No, I think it's an ultrasound. The Cardio Ankle Vascular Index. Well, that's a measure of the flexibility and the health of the blood vessels around the ankle. And so if I look at the placebo and I look at the low-dose lecithin, there's no change or improvement. But when it comes to the higher dose, which is 1,200 milligrams a day, oh my goodness, it's like radically improving. Oh, this is technical right here. I probably shouldn't read this. No, I will. I'll try to explain it. In healthy Japanese, this index decreases by about 0.04 points after the 20th year of life each year, according to the figure above. That just means as a person ages, the health of their arteries is in the decline. I mean, you get this in the real world. As you age, things just don't work as well as they did. Does that make sense? Okay, when they gave them a dose of 1,200 milligrams of less than a day, all of a sudden, they were able to, and this is just in 8 weeks, they were able to rejuvenate the blood vessels by about 10 years. Or, would you like me to say it a different way? Their arteries became 10 years younger, according to that, you know, vascular index scale. Okay, here's what the researcher said. This is what the researcher summarized. The results showed that a high dose, 1,200 milligrams of soybean oil, I don't even want to call it a high dose anymore. I want to call it the just right dose. The dose that leads to rejuvenation. Or if you want to say vim, vigor, vitality, we can do that. The results showed that the high dose, which was 1,200 milligrams a day of soy lecithin, not only increases vigor, but it also lowers the diastolic blood pressure. And, maybe number three, it lowers the cardioangle vascular index. That means the arteries became healthier, more flexible, supple, spry. This was only done in Japanese middle-aged women who were fatigued. Okay, here's two more articles right here. I'm not going to read them because I did not even try to look at them. By the way, the phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. I have days that people call me and they want me to spend an hour with them on the phone answering questions. I can't do that while I have patients. But I can here at the radio station. So if you want to call and ask me a question, now's your chance to do so. I just don't always have the ability to do that daily at the office. Okay? And someone's trying to call, so let's go to the phone lines. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Wilson.
Uh-oh, what happened? Uh-oh, lost it. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Just try one more time. It's real simple. Listen to this title right here until she calls back again. She's probably still talking and doesn't know I lost the signal, but she'll figure it out. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Listen to this right here as an abstract. Okay, hang on. We're going to go back to the phone lines. All right, good morning. I got you now.
Sorry, it dropped.
That's all right.
Okay, so my mom is 89 years old, and she just started having acid reflux, is what I call it, or indigestion, heartburn, indigestion at night. And so she has to get up out of bed, and she said the only thing she has is peanut butter that seems to help. I don't know what to do. She doesn't want to take pills, you know.
Does she have a hiatal hernia?
I don't know.
Well, that'd be my guess.
Okay. Okay. So okay. She needs to see a doctor about that.
Sure. I mean, I kind of said that hesitantly because a lot of times what they want to do is they want to do a surgical procedure.
Oh no, I'm not going to let her do that.
Don't you think you're a little bit controlling of your mother?
Yes, at that age I am.
I think I would be too. I agree with you. You know what? I remember this is a long time ago. I'm just wasting your time. My mother one time got sick. Okay, she was never sick. I mean, but one time she was sick, I said, man, I got to do something. And this is probably around the year, I don't know, 98, 99. You know, it was a long time ago.
Yes.
I went to her and said, Mom, I'm taking you right now to go get you some help. And she said, no, you're not. And so I actually grabbed her and picked her manually, put her in the car, and she was kind of kicking and screaming. But she was actually, I was at the advantage because she was too weak to fight me at that point. But anyway, enough of that. But we always do what's in the other person's best interest, right?
Yes.
Okay, so can I just tell you what I'm thinking about?
Okay.
Okay, they're one of the largest smooth muscles in the body that I find very interesting. It's a muscle called the diaphragm.
Mm-hmm.
And the diaphragm is actually larger than the weight of the heart. So it's really one of the most incredible organs. And so the diaphragm, when it works right, it's able to press against the top of the stomach. And when it contracts, it pushes all the contents of the stomach and the small intestine, the liver, the pancreas, gallbladder, colon. It's able, with each breath, when you have what's called deep diaphragmatic breathing, it's able to massage all those organs. And I think when the diaphragm's working right, nobody has constipation. It just doesn't happen.
Oh.
And so because it's able to keep the conveyor belts moving. But there is an opening in the diaphragm, and that's usually called the hiatus. It's just an opening. And through that opening, I mean, it makes sense. If you have, you know, a bowl of blueberries and yogurt this morning, when you chew them up and you swallow them, that takes on average about 10 to 12 seconds for that to go from your mouth when you swallow it. It takes about 10, let's just say 10 seconds. For that, okay, just slowly works along the conveyor belt called your esophagus, where it starts pushing it downward into the stomach. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But you have a ring-like sphincter muscle. It's called the cardiac sphincter. Or if, okay, you want to call it the lower esophageal sphincter, I'm not going to argue. But this is like a ring-like sphincter. It's kind of like if you change a diaper on a baby, they have an anal sphincter, and it opens up, and they poop, and you clean it up, and it closes back up, mm-hmm, again. So this sphincter muscle is supposed to maintain what's called its normal resting tone. I mean, it's got good tone, good muscle tone. But if that sphincter muscle starts to lose its tone, what happens is that's where you have acid reflux. That's where stuff goes from the stomach. It starts going from north to south. I mean, from south to north is what I meant to say. And so in the stomach itself, you've got this nice thick layer. I'm going to call it mucin or mucus. Man, in that acid bath, the acid never touches the flesh of the stomach because you got that layer of mucus to protect it. But you don't have that in the esophagus. So when you have the acid secretions of the stomach, they start boiling up like a mad scientist in a laboratory has boiling flask of acid. If that stuff boils up into your esophagus, well, you don't have that protective mucus layer. So it just burns the daylights out of your esophagus, and that's misery. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so let me just kind of talk it through, and maybe I'll come up with some point here or there. So we got a whole bunch of options here. I don't know which one is going to be the case, but we'll just start off with point number A.
Okay.
When you're 85 years old, it may be that you just don't make enough acid secrete. I know this is going to be counterintuitive. It's probably not even going to make sense. Because the first thing I'm going to suggest is maybe her problem is that she's not really making enough acid. Because if you don't make enough hydrochloric acid and digestive enzymes, then the food just kind of sits there. And so if it sits there for like 2 hours, it's going to start forming what are called volatile organic acids. And those just start boiling up like a flask in a laboratory where it just boils up hot. And so if she's lacking hydrochloric acid, that may be the whole problem right there.
Okay.
Okay, have you ever heard of the baking soda test?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay, it doesn't take much to do it. If you took like a small cup of water or a cup of water.
Okay.
And I'm going to say a quarter teaspoon of just plain Jane Arm & Hammer baking soda. You stir it in the water. I mean, you're going to have to stir it a little bit to make it mix up. I mean, the water will go from clear to cloudy pretty quick, and you may have to keep working it for a while before it turns clear again. But that's called the baking soda test, and that's just a very simple home test that I think is valid, and you can sort of determine if the person's making enough hydrochloric acid. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So if your mom takes the baking soda and drinks it all down, and then you set do you have a second hand on your watch?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You probably have an Apple iWatch, so you don't have a second hand, do you?
No, I don't have an Apple. I don't have an Apple phone either.
Actually, I'm looking at my Timex right now. You didn't know this, but Timex is a luxury watch brand.
Yes.
But I can see it's actually cheap and it works great. It takes a licking and keeps on ticking, doesn't it? But I'm watching my second hand, but if I say now go, or I set my stopwatch, if your mama is burping and belching inside of 2 minutes, that means she's got plenty of stomach acid. But if it goes for 3 minutes after you drink the baking soda water and she's still not burping and belching, you know, forming gas, that's a pretty good indication she didn't have enough stomach acid.
Okay.
So that's one thing. So one option would be supplemental hydrochloric acid therapy. So it's called replacement therapy. So if a person is older and they have a diminished capacity for their stomach to make hydrochloric acid, either we take hydrochloric acid, or maybe you could take lemon juice before a meal. The easy one is just apple cider vinegar.
Okay.
So if your mama had like a... Okay, there's a lot of room for compromise on everything I'm telling you here. Just because I say something doesn't mean you have to do it that way. But I'm just going to guess maybe a starting point might be 2 teaspoons of apple cider vinegar and water.
Okay.
And so if she was to drink that, let's just say 10 minutes before she eats, and then all of a sudden she doesn't have acid reflux anymore, I think we have an answer.
Okay.
The other thing that I want to bring up, and this is not what I call the fun conversation, because I don't know anybody that ever calls me or tells me, oh, I love that talk, Dr. Morgan. That's splendid. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. I don't get that. But it's usually because they become too weak. And so if the hip muscles, like the hip flexors and the hip rotators, if they become very weak and a person loses their strength and they become feeble, then what that does is it causes upward pressure on your stomach, where your stomach starts bulging through the diaphragm and creates a hiatal hernia. So in reverse, what's the solution to that? Do exercises to become stronger.
Okay.
I think the hips and the pelvis, that's the core of the human body. And if you can get those stronger, then we're in business. Okay.
Okay.
Number next, and this is probably a little bit more simple.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to massage and push your stomach back in place.
Oh.
I think if I had you know how during World War II, if an American fighter pilot on the aircraft carrier, you know, Enterprise, if he shot down five Japanese, they'd call him an ace. And what he may do is he may put like a, you know, the flag stamp on the side of his plane, designating how many planes he shot down in combat. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If I did the same thing in my office with a black marker, I'd probably have about 3,000 marks on my wall every time that I've pulled a stomach back down, where you just try to manually grab the stomach and pull the hiatal hernia back in place.
Oh, well, okay.
So, but the key is we want to become stronger. We want to create the right environment for the body to heal itself. So you've got lemon juice before a meal, apple cider vinegar before a meal. I think the things that make this worse is going to be called sugar, sugar, sugar. Does your mama have a sweet tooth?
No, well, I can't say that. She'll eat it if it's there.
Well, let me say,
make it.
All right, well, let me get off that topic then. The stomach has got to have what's called chlorine in order to make hydrochloric acid. So when I say hydrochloric acid, H would be hydrogen. The Cl would be the chloride. So if a person is, so if you did a blood test, there's like a very simple blood test. I think the lab charges $10 to run it. It's called a comprehensive metabolic panel, but they measure chloride all the time.
Okay.
Does she take blood pressure medication?
No.
Okay. Wow. Does she take any drugs?
She takes something for sleep.
Okay.
But I'm not sure what it is.
Gotcha. Trazodone?
Probably.
Anyway, so if a person is lacking salt, you know, which is sodium chloride, that makes it hard for your stomach to work right. You've actually got to have some salt. And I guess one of the reasons that I think about talking about these things is because the average person is just literally terrified of salt. They have heard from every news source and medical media that salt is the most evil, wicked thing on the planet. I don't agree with that at all. I'm kind of telling people day in, day out, have you ever heard of Redmond sea salt? Maybe you should go buy some from the health food store and start using a little bit with your food to see if it helps improve your energy.
And then sea salt.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, and I say that one because when you look at the analysis studies where they test it to see if it contains any contamination of heavy metals, it's usually really, really clean.
Okay.
I can't say that about Himalayan salt that comes from Pakistan and China. I'm going to write an email to Donald Trump today and ask him to put a tariff of 2,000,000% on salt that comes from China. I hope he listens to me. Yes, I'm diabolically plotting to make America healthy again. Anyway, but those are some ideas right there. The other thing that I would do is I would just push it back down in place. And I don't know that I can spend a lot of time explaining that because you may not get it, but just go to YouTube.
Yeah.
And just type in manual procedure for correcting a hiatal hernia. Just stroke, just have her take her thumbs and push it back in place. I was in a, can I tell you a quick story?
Yes.
Okay. I was in a restaurant one time, and there was an older woman. I don't mean that disrespectfully, mm-hmm. but she kind of couldn't talk. And I thought, I'm fixing to do the Heimlich maneuver on her. I've been wanting to punch somebody really hard in the, no. But she said, and you could tell food was stuck in her throat. But but what I thought was, she's got a hiatal hernia. So this woman was able to walk outside because she was just going, man, I'm about to choke in here. So she got up, and I said, man, I followed her out. I said, I don't always do that. But anyway, but I followed her out because anyway, but I said, man, can I take care of this? and she kind of like nodded at me. So I put my hand on the top of the stomach and I manually pulled it back down. I think it took me about, can I just say 15 seconds to work it back down?
Okay. Uh-huh.
I mean, she didn't like it. It was painful. I mean, it was uncomfortable. Uh-huh. But it, what would you rather do? If you were choking on food and you were, you know, becoming a bit anxious about that, wouldn't you let me pull your stomach back down in place?
Probably, yes.
So anyway, once I pulled it down in place, I encouraged her to drink some water to make sure the esophagus was like, you know, the water and the fluid could drain. So everything was fine over that. I think I told her specifically, you need to start taking some vinegar before you eat a meal. You know, that's the other point, is it's whatever we do consistently that's going to make the big difference. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if your mom eats a lot of chocolate, if she drinks a lot of sweet tea, if she eats peppermint candies, that's probably going to make all this worse.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, is that enough, or do you want me to keep going?
Whatever you want to do.
Well, no, I've given you the foundation right there.
Yes. No, this is great. I will
okay.
do this.
All right, good deal. Give my mama your best.
Have a good day.
I mean, my best.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. Bye-bye. All right, there's a phone line open. The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Of course, what I'm saying is probably like a radical idea because it requires effort and it requires education. But isn't that what you want? Or do you just want one more drug and then another drug on top of that? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I would like to ask you what your ideas or conclusion is about Lyme disease and how to treat it.
I think it's a nutritional solution. I've taken care of so many people with Lyme disease, and you know, what do you do with a person that's been on antibiotics for 2 years, but they haven't been able to regain their strength?
Right.
And so I don't know if you heard the first part of the program, but it was about women that had normal blood work, but they were fatigued. You know, they had no energy. And the article that I read was about consuming what's called soybean lecithin. And when I broke down one of the components, it contains phosphatidylcholine. So basically, nutritionally, what you're doing is you're giving your body the right amount of nutrients so her own immune system can heal itself. I like stuff like that. So antibiotics, they can't, quote, give you energy. So nutritionally, you're just looking for, what can I do to feed and nourish the body? So I'm picking and choosing what I'm going to tell you, but there's a gland that sits just on top of the kidneys. It's called the adrenal gland.
Right.
Yeah. And the adrenal gland, it has a lot to do with helping the immune system navigate if it's going to rise to the occasion and do its job properly, or it's going to underperform, and maybe the immune system just becomes very, very sluggish. I think I've told you before on the radio, or everyone listening is what I really meant to say, that the difference between a person that dies at age 65 and a person that's still vital and functional at the age of 95 is an immune system that works about 10% better. And so what I would like to do is I'd like to think about, what can we do to help a person with Lyme disease function at least 10% better? So soybean lecithin is one idea. The other idea that, you know, I can tell you what popped in my mind. Anytime somebody has a chronic immune problem, one vitamin that I like to think of, there's a bunch of them. I started to say vitamin C, but I'm going to switch my gears and I'm going to say vitamin D3. I mean, the newest studies that are coming out just on vitamin D3 alone. And what I'm going to suggest is there's a certain amount, if we only think of it this way, if we put it in the box, or if we put blinders on, we might tell ourselves, Vitamin D3 is only for bone health. Well, okay, you can do that, but there's going to be a certain amount of vitamin D above and beyond the amount that you would use to make your bone strong. So I'm just saying, is there a higher amount of vitamin D that you could take that all of a sudden your immune system would work so much better at keeping your body in good repair than if you only took an amount of vitamin D just to keep your bone strong? So I may have been a little bit confusing the way I worded that, but I'm saying you've got to be open to an idea. So this person with Lyme disease, most likely their vitamin D3 levels, if you have them tested, which it's easy to do. Now, that's not a cheap test. I think the lab charges $44 for that. But I think it's valuable. I mean, don't you think we need to know if a person has Lyme disease, what their vitamin D3 levels are?
Well, it sounds like it, yeah.
Well, that would be one thing that I would kind of throw your direction to say, just, you know, prayerfully consider that, because you're the one, or the person with the Lyme disease, they win if you improve that. But I think probably somewhere around 100 to 105 is like a really, really good starting point on the vitamin D3 if you want to see a change. So I think I've mentioned this before, that the two most common symptoms of a vitamin D deficiency, or if I choose to use the terminology insufficiency, and what I mean by that is you've got less vitamin D than you need to get the job done. Does that make sense?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the two most common symptoms of a vitamin D deficiency are going to be fatigue that just never seems to go away or resolve itself. I don't know about anybody else, but that would be so discouraging to have this bone-weary fatigue with you from the moment you wake up until the end of the day. And you're going, right, what am I going to do with my life? I'm too tired to do anything. I mean, wouldn't that be discouraging?
Well, it's not good, that's for sure.
No, it's not ideal. I agree with you. The other symptom that you have, it's going to be inflammation and pain. Now,
yeah, that's the big thing that she deals with.
Okay, so we've got those two metrics right there. So if I asked you about her, and I said, how would you rate her energy levels? Well, she's not going to say a 10. And then if I said, 10 would be the highest number of inflammation or pain, but she's not going to say a 0, like, I feel amazing, I have no discomfort at all. But I do want you to think about that vitamin D3 plays a role. I am not saying it is a panacea.
Yeah.
I think vitamin C has been shown to be quite significant. See, the way that I would do this, if she were here at the radio station right now, is I would try to go through all the details, and if she's been to a doctor and the doctor's done blood test or lab test or urinalysis, I would look at those, and I would look at them in a way like, what's not working right here? So if I see something that's out of balance, I would try to explain what I think that means. I'm not always right about those. I'm forever going to my computer or books and getting reference points to figure out, okay, could this mean something else? So what if it comes back and her neutrophils, which is a type of white blood cell, is elevated and her lymphocytes are low? Well, that could suggest that either she's got a whole bunch of free radical activity, which is a recipe for disaster, or she's got a chronic low-grade infection, kind of like, you know, rickettsia or something like that. So we're trying to find a way to improve her. And then I would try to examine her in such a way to find out what's our starting point. And what that means is the job of a physician is to educate the patient, but the doctor has got to figure out where does the problem come from. Or, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could say this. I would say, where's the primary focus? That means, where is everything originating from? Or if I said that in reverse, so what if it comes back that the adrenal glands are so exhausted and so weak and they can't do their job, they can't rise to the occasion? That may have to be the starting point. Or what if it's a gut problem or a heart problem or a blood problem? We're going to have to find some way to get this woman stronger again, where she can be restored to great vitality and functioning.
So the soybean lectin and the vitamin D is a good start, right?
Well, yes. But, I mean, you got to understand, on the radio, there's probably 12 hours of information that you're... Is this your wife we're talking about?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Yeah, she needs more information. It just depends on how curious is she and how much is she willing to help herself. And I have a feeling she is.
Well, she's been fighting this for many years.
Well, what is the greatest thing that any doctor has done for her?
They have a procedure that where they take the blood and they ship it off and they treat it for so that the bugs can't replicate, and they bring it back and they put the blood back in her.
Has that completely turned her health around?
Oh no.
Okay, then what is the greatest thing that a doctor's done to help get her back to being whole again and well?
There isn't anything so far.
Okay, so I think that answers my question. Isn't that what we're here for? Aren't we trying to address the root cause of the problem so she can be restored back to good? I think that would be my definition of healing. How do we find a natural way to get her back to good again? I know that sounds kind of simple, doesn't it?
Well, it's we've been through so many things, so many options, so many doctors.
Well, which options have worked?
Well, she had stem cell therapy in Germany.
Okay, did that work?
Years ago. It did make a benefit. Yeah.
How much?
She did realize. 20 or 25%.
Okay, was she able to maintain that, or did she go back and revert back to her previous level?
Well,
we're either rejuvenating the body and healing it. It's either healing at a faster rate, or that's the term inflammation. The body's breaking down faster than it's healing.
Yeah, they have tests that they've run since then to determine, Borrelia babesia, co-infections.
Yeah, Borrelia babesia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the levels were down, and now they, in some cases, they've come back up higher. So it's kind of like...
What would you say is the main way that she feels all day long?
She has a multiple of problems. One of them... I think the one, of course, the Lyme disease is bad.
Well, no, I'm talking about how she feels. What's the thing that she experiences the most feeling wise?
Tiredness.
Okay. Maybe we should run toward that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Is those recommendations you've made so far, would they address the energy level, for example?
Well, I know you want them to. I mean, this is a real simple program. I mean, you're telling me a very complex situation, and I have almost no information. It's not like I have. What are her blood values? let me give you two or three ideas right here.
Okay,
there is a compound that is produced in the bloodstream. It's called uric acid. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a number. If you ordered a uric acid test, I think the lab charges $8.40 or $8.50 to have that marker done. $8 and change. Mm-hmm. Okay, uric acid in a woman above the number 5 means that uric acid is building up to a level where it's blocking her mitochondria. What that means is she will not be able to get oxygen and blood sugar into the mitochondria. That's going to be the structure in all cells where energy production takes place. Okay. So on one level, she's got a very severe mitochondrial problem. And if her uric acid levels are above the number 5, then how are we going to restore her energy? But your body is going to produce uric acid primarily because of insulin resistance. And so I don't know what her body weight is. I don't know what her diet's like. But if she has insulin resistance, that's going to totally be the biggest roadblock of all time to her getting back to good and having energy. I mean, that's literally what we need to run toward. How do we create the right circumstances with her health where she can be restored back to making lots of energy? That's the solution. See, I want to get off the other stuff. What I want to think about is, how do we get her to be an energy-producing machine again, where she can make all the energy that she needs? That's the currency. Without that, there's no healing that takes place.
Right.
So, all the doctors she's been to, they have all the advantage because they've examined her. I have not. I don't even know what her vitamin D levels are. Do you know what they are?
No, sir, I don't.
Do you know what her magnesium levels are?
No, sir, I don't.
Optimal's 2.4 and above. Optimal on vitamin D3 is probably 105 for Lyme disease. So those are uric acid. We got to have that below 5. Hemoglobin A1C, if she wants to get well, we got to get that around 4.5, 4.7. Could you do all those things and measure them and see if she lines up? If she's perfect, I'll say, boy, was I wrong about that.
Well, we can check the A1C pretty easy from home deal.
Yeah, but uric acid, I mean, you can test that in tomorrow morning if you want to. Just show up at the lab with an order. You want to order it yourself? Let me tell you how to do that. There's a website called ownyourlabs.com.
Okay.
If you go on ownyourlabs.com, what you could do is you could go down the list and you could say, I'd like to order a vitamin D3. I'd like to order a serum magnesium. I'd like to order uric acid. I think I'd like to order APOB, $17 test. I think I'll do a comprehensive metabolic panel. I think I'll do a complete blood count with differential. I think I'll do a lipid panel. You could do all those things, and there's no fluff in it at all. See, I know this because I looked at the price list from a lady that she brought me her price list. I don't know why she did, but she wanted me to see it. The hospital charged $859 to do a comprehensive metabolic panel. If you go to ownyourlabs.com, it costs $10. Now, you tell me, I know you're a multi-billionaire, but does it matter to you whether you spend $10 or do you want to do it the other way and get charged $859 for the test?
I'd have to go the $10 route.
Man, you and me both. So if you go to that website, all you do is just... it's done. They'll send the results right back to you. So let's find out if she's really in balance or not.
Yeah, I think we'll start on that.
I think you're smart. I think that you've got an amazing plan right here. We've got a working plan. Let's find out if she's... and get a hemoglobin A1C while you're at it. That's like a $8 or $9 test. Or is it 5? I can't remember. But if you go to ownyourlabs.com, you can order those things. They'll give you the choice of whichever lab you want to go to. I don't know where you're calling from.
Yeah, I'm here in Fairfield.
Fairfield, okay. So if you're in Fairfield, they will give you the names of all the laboratories that you can take your wife to. Now, this is a test that she needs to do fasting, which means no coffee, no tea. She can drink all the water she wants. So if y'all had a nice dinner together for Valentine's Day at 6 o'clock, that means... she's good to go if you show up at the lab at 7 o'clock just drinking water only. It's a fasting test.
Okay.
You could even throw a fasting insulin in there. That'll tell you a lot. But we've got to find out how her machinery is all jacked up so we can fix her. You're the one that's going to be happy about this when you get a wife that's back in good working order again.
Yeah, it would be nice.
I don't want you calling and complaining to me when your wife spends too much energy washing and waxing and detailing your pickup every day because she has so much energy.
Well, I wouldn't complain to you for any reason, but...
you're a smart man. So anyway, I've given you many options, and I already know in my mind, we haven't even scratched the surface, but... I hope I've instilled into you that if you want to be well, why don't we start asking questions about what's not working right? Tell me what her uric acid levels are. That's one way to sabotage a woman from ever getting well. So let's find out.
Okay. That metabolic panel, would that cover all of these, or would I need to check them off individually?
Probably check them off individually. So I've tried to list. The metabolic panel covers a lot. I mean, for all I know, her electrolytes are low. I mean, I'm an oversimplifier, but her body is a solar-powered battery. It's designed to capture sunlight and eat food and make energy. You got to have oxygen. So let's look at her electrolytes. We got so many great things to look at that could help explain why she's not fully restored to getting well.
Well, you're giving me a lot of good places to start.
Yeah, there's a lot of you're right. There's a lot of good stuff there. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's find out what happens, man.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. I don't know. There's 3 minutes left in the program. Is that really enough time for another caller? I don't know. Those are one of the great questions of life I don't know the answer to. Is there enough time? Hey, these were two articles about lecithin. Listen to this right here. One article abstract says, lecithin supplement keeps your hearing sharp. And I didn't look up the article, so I couldn't tell you any more. But they have, let me see right here. No, there's just not enough information, but it shows there's a graph that shows almost every metric of a human being's ability to hear stuff. You might could improve it based on lecithin. How about that? Now, listen to this right here. This is the article. I'm definitely going to look this one up. Excuse me. It says a couple of grams of choline improves coordination ability. And where do you get choline from? You get it from lecithin. They say that athletes who take 2 grams of the lecithin compound choline 70 minutes before competition, they are more likely to aim, shoot, and kick and hit more accurately. So that means if you're the shooting guard for the Mavericks, you need to be taking some choline right before a game because you're going to be more accurate. Or if you're the kicker for the Dallas Cowboys, you need to have some choline right before the game. That way you can set the world record for scoring a 69.5-yard field goal attempt. Isn't that interesting? But where does choline come from? It comes from lecithin. It does. Okay, I think one of the things that I have to consider when I'm taking care of people is they've been sold a narrative, and I get that. So it's my job to try to educate. And I think I sort of do that, maybe not perfectly, because, you know, I'm a human being just like you are. But even what I've told you this morning, if you hear the information about soybean lecithin improving the quality and the health of your arteries, now the ball's in your court. You know, if you want to limp around and be broken down and you can barely even move, then that's your choice. God is so good to us. He gives every human being the ability to choose, but I'm afraid you've got to have the right attitude to make a good choice. A bad attitude is not going to get you there. A bad attitude is usually very resistant. It's not based on knowledge. It's just they don't want to. It'd be like telling a person, would you be willing to drink a glass of water a day to save your kidneys? Well, not if they don't want to. It's their call if they want to drink endless cans of Zevia, which I think is toxic to the kidneys. But people do it anyway. I wouldn't do it. Personally, I don't ever see a person get well when their kidneys are bad and they drink stevia all day long. Yeah, is that an observation? Yeah, that's all it is. I'm not trying to say that's ultra-scientific. Anyway, I've enjoyed being with you this morning. You're listening to KBJS, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.